Welcome to the Inclusive Education Project. I'm Vicki Brett.
I'm Amanda Salohi. We're two civil rights lawyers on a mission to change the conversation about education, civil rights, and modern activism.
Each week, we're going to explore new topics which are going to educate and empower others
and give them a platform to enact change in education and level the playing field. Welcome back, friends.
Hi, listeners. We hope you guys are hanging in there with this end of the year push, or end of the school year, I should say.
Yeah. So we're pivoting a little bit today. Obviously, we mostly talk about education here, but we also want to talk about all aspects of life for children living with disabilities and making sure that families and people who are working with these families have all the resources and tools to advise families on how to, you know, kind of have a well-rounded toolkit for how to support their kids. And one of those things we've talked about in the past is we've talked about conservatorships and special needs trusts. And so today we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the financial side of raising a child with a disability. And so, James, thank you for so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Amanda and Vicki. So
James, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. So I am a CPA and state attorney and a writer. I've had 9 best-selling books in the financial world and 36 appearances in the Wall Street Journal. And I don't say that to brag, but I just want people to know right off the top, this is not going to be BS. And they're going to get some great information. So anyway, my specialty, if you were, is helping parents or people with IRAs and retirement plans. Mm-hmm. Then our daughter developed dysautonomia, which is a malfunction of the autonomic nervous system, which effectively makes her unable to work. So my wife and I were on track for a comfortable retirement for us and some kind of inheritance for our daughter. But now we not only have the issue of providing for us and our daughter for the rest of her life, the rest of our lives, but also the rest of her life. And that became our biggest worry. And even though I have a successful practice, it's not easy to accumulate enough money to not only provide for yourself, your spouse, your child during your life, but in our case, she could survive us by 40 or 50 years, not be
exactly.
So how do we provide for her? And, you know, the obvious thing, well, okay, work longer, save more, spend less.
Insurance.
And there's nothing wrong with any of those.
Yeah.
I knew that there was something better. And I didn't do this with the idea I was going to try to save the world and, you know, tell everybody about. I was just worried, okay, how am I going to provide for my daughter? And then my background, specifically with IRAs and retirement plans and the Secure Act IRA conversions, but just perfect to help my daughter. So we put together a plan. And as a result of the plan, if you compare, if we did nothing, and for not even including government benefits, if we did nothing, using reasonable projections, our daughter runs out of money. With our plan, our daughter will have $1.9 million in today's dollars. And this isn't from insurance. This isn't some trick investment.
Oh, wow.
It's basically a massive transfer from Uncle Sam to our daughter. And if you included government benefits, SSDI in our case, or SSI, then the transfer becomes much, much greater. So now we have the solution. The anxiety level for my wife and I, we're still anxious about some of the non-financial aspects of her life.
Yeah, of course.
Like she could have $1 billion. She's still going to have problems.
Right.
But let's say I wanted to focus on the area where I'm an expert. I'm not a social worker. I'm a financial guy. Our anxiety level went way down. And interestingly enough, after I really informed her what we were doing and I was more specific, and she's a very bright girl, and you know, she would do an advanced calculus physics problem in a nanosecond. She understands numbers. She realized, oh, I'm going to be okay financially for the rest of my life. We didn't talk about it before, but that was a huge worry for her.
And
probably most people with some kind of disability, or for that matter, almost anybody, if you can reduce anxiety, you're very likely to improve the physical function.
Absolutely. And this is a problem that a lot of our clients face, right? And we have, you know, some of the the tools to kind of navigate from childhood to early adulthood in that, as Amanda said, we do limited conservatorships and special needs trusts, but the financial aspect, I mean, we have no clue, right? We're just like anybody else where we defer to the experts like yourself. And that's why we were really excited to have you on, because, you know, this is something that you yourself have gone through and are in, and just with your expertise, like you were saying, it really gave you the tools to kind of put a plan together. And then what we appreciate is you sharing that information and wanting to distribute it to parents that find themselves in similar situations as you.
Well, that's kind of become my life mission. You know, I'm 67 years old. I've had a very good career in financial services, both as an estate attorney and as a financial advisor and a CPA. But very frankly, most of my clients have net worths of $1 million or more. So I'm basically helping middle class, upper middle class folks who are already going to be okay, even without my help, to do better, pass more money on to their kids. But let's just say for discussion's sake that I have a client, the people that I've worked with for 35 years, and I screw it up or I don't get the best result. And their kid ends up with, say, a $500,000 less than if I had done everything right, all the planning, the Roth conversion, all the strategies. That's a bad thing. But if you have a child with a disability and the attorney or the advisor or you screw up, and your kid ends up with $500,000 less than they would have otherwise, and they can't work, that is a financial tragedy. So I am kind of on a mission to make sure that parents with a child with a disability can optimize what they do have. And again, I'm not trying to sell life insurance. In fact, there's a small section on life insurance, but that's not the crux of my message.
So what is it that you like say to people when they come to you and they are in that situation, right? That we find a lot of our clients where they want to plan. What are, do you have kind of like in mind, like the top three things that you would say to them?
Well, let's do talk about the top three, because even though there's a lot of sub variations within the three, I would say that the three basic components of the plan that I've developed apply to most any parent with a child with a disability, whether they're broke or whether they have $10 million. So why don't we go through them, because I think that they are mission critical. Number one, the most important thing, and I tell people, you know, if you haven't done this, it's too early to see me. Number one is getting a child qualified for government benefits in the form of SI or SSDI.
Right.
Okay.
Debbie McFadden, who is the expert in this area, she was the Commissioner of Disabilities under H.W. Bush. She had 400 attorneys under her. How would you like to
meet
400 attorneys?
What are No, thank you.
But anyway, she did get, obviously with a lot of help, the Disabilities Act of 1990 passed. So her big thing is And typically, if a client has, for SSI, that's really a poverty program. And if the child is less than 18 years old, they're going to include the income and the resources of the parent. So a lot of parents make too much money or they have too many assets in order to qualify for their child until the child is 18. So she's very, very big on, you know, I think 1 month after the child turns 18, if that child qualifies, talk about that for a long time, if the child potentially qualifies for SSI or in some case SSDI, and we don't have time to go into the distinctions, it's mission critical to do that. Mm-hmm. Most applications are denied. And the appeals process is expensive, and there's a high denial rate for the appeals process. Mm. Want to get that done right. In the limited time, I'll just say the one thing where people botch it that she fights all the time. It is natural for a parent to be optimistic about how their child will do. And when they're telling the world, they're trying to put things in a positive light. And you want the exact opposite. You want to tell, you know, the people at the Social Security Administration all the things your child can't do. And sometimes the child themselves will resist this. So I've had that multiple times, particularly when the child is older, maybe in their 20s or 30s, because they think they're going to be okay. And this is what I would say. I would say if you have a disability or a parent who's trying to provide for a child with a disability, you have a very tough road, even if you do everything right, to provide for that child. So this is no time to brag. You want to tell the Social Security Administration all the problems.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
So as an example, Debbie McFadden's daughter is an above the knee amputee, but she is also one of the top amputee rock climbers in the country.
Wow. Maybe.
So this woman can get up a flight of steps. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When she did the application, she didn't say, oh, by the way, she can just hop up the steps faster than
right.
I could walk up.
No, right.
She can't go up a flight of steps the way a normal person would go up steps.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, we talk about that with families often who try to apply for IHSS as well, where families put in so many like accommodations in their home, from locking drawers with knives to, you know, putting baby gates on. And we do so many things to secure our child's safety. But what they need to be knowing is, what can they do or what can't they do without all these accommodations, without all of the supports? Because it is important to know, like, this is different than, you know, a typical child or a typical person.
And you have to typically get corroboration from, you know, doctors, from maybe from teachers, maybe from social workers, maybe for caregivers to prove it's, I mean, it's even though, interestingly, you don't have to be an attorney to do this work. And some people, they like to pack their own parachute. They can do it themselves. But that's the first thing. Mission critical. Debbie calls it the golden ticket. You qualify for Medicare. You qualify for special equipment. You get into the estate planning aspect of it. Often tuition, vocational rehabilitation. There's a lot that you can do. So that's number one. All right. Okay. And I'm going to give an offer for a free book. Debbie does a great job of explaining that in the book. So that's step number one. Step number two, which is more in your area, is get your estate planning done and get it done appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that you've already spoken about the importance of special needs trust.
Yes.
And how the special needs trust will protect the child and protect the child's government benefit.
Yes.
All right. Now, here's, let's say, one of the downsides of the special needs trust. First, you have to qualify for a government benefit, whether it's SSI or SSDI or something else. And sometimes we just don't know how our child is going to do. Maybe a child's on the spectrum of autism or ADHD or a brain injury, and we're not sure how that child is going to be at the time of our death. And let's do two examples. One, let's say that we're drafting at a time that we just don't know.
Right.
And example number one is we're really sure that the child isn't going to qualify for benefits. Well, then we don't want to do a special needs trust because a special needs trust is much more restrictive than, let's just say, a regular protection trust.
Mm-hmm.
So for that, if it's really obvious that kid is never going to get government benefits, then it's pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
We won't do a special needs trust. We'll do, let's say, more or less a spendthrift or a protective trust, which, you know, a lot of estate attorneys are very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say that we have something that's very clear. The child's in a wheelchair, the child, you know, can't speak, they're blind, whatever it is. Well, then we do the special needs trust. All right. And I suspect that your office has done those many times. And I always say, go to a specialist. Don't go to Joe Schmo, a state attorney.
Yes.
Even if they're good. I mean, our did 3,000 wills and trusts. And we think that we know this stuff pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not the disability stuff.
Right.
We referred it out. And a lot of times, just like you guys, firms that do that work can help with auxiliary services. So, for example, Julia Steinbacher has social workers on her staff. Even though I had this law firm, I didn't do it in our law firm. I had Julia do it. And guess what? Her social workers were very helpful with insurance and a bunch of things that most lawyers have no clue about.
Right.
And she was much better with things like guardianship provisions and conservatorships and things that you know. All right, so you guys know that better than I do, but I'm going to add one little wrinkle that I hope that you're going to like. So I said, what happens if you know your kid's going to get benefits? Mm-hmm. What happens mm-hmm. if you know that your kid isn't? What if you don't know? What if your kid's getting benefits now, but they're doing, maybe they have dyslexia, and the hope is after some training, they'll mm-hmm. be able to read well enough to get a job. Now mm-hmm. you're stuck with this inappropriate trust. Or mm-hmm. say a kid doesn't have benefits, maybe they have a brain injury, but and it looks like, and we're hopeful they're going to work, but it turns out that they can't. So what do you do when you're drafting the documents for these kids, or for if you're a parent and you're going to an estate attorney, what do you tell the estate attorney? Oh, yeah, draft a special needs or draft a more traditional protective trust. There's something called a toggle trust. And the way a toggle trust works is you basically, it's basically kind of two trusts in one. You have the okay. traditional protection trust, you have the special needs trust, and then the trustee, not now, but at the time of your death, gets the toggle to either special needs trust or protective trust. And you can even go further, but you need this gets a little bit more complicated. It's possible that you could even, in some circumstances, depending on states, have additional switches maybe 20 years after you're gone if the child's condition changes again.
Let me ask if there's state-specific laws on these toggle trusts, because I know with special needs trusts in California, we have to fund them right away. We can't fund them later. So how do you get around that? It sounds like you're not funding them right away. So how do you get around that?
Well, no, you might be funding them, you know, very soon after death. I'm not saying the next day, but no, this isn't something that you sit around for. You go one way or the other in the short run. And typically, and I don't know if it's 9 months or how long you have to, you know, how long it has to be before you fund them. But after death, you're picking one. And I'm complicating life and saying, okay, let's say at the time of the parent's death, the child is on SSDI or SSI. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And under the new ruling, the IRS has to accept what the Social Security Administration determined. So then presumably they are going to qualify, and they're going to qualify for the inherited stretch IRA over the child's life, or better yet, the inherited stretch Roth IRA over the child's life. And that can often be the difference for the child of $1 million. So just to do easy numbers. Example mm-hmm, number mm-hmm. one, child doesn't qualify for SSI or SSDI. They have to take out the entire inherited IRA within 10 years of their parents' death.
Okay.
So that means they have to pay taxes on that money at a high rate, and it's worse at a trust rate, within 10 years. Example number two, they don't have to take it out over 10 years. They have the old pre-2020 rules under the Pre-Secure Act, where they could stretch it or take distributions over their entire lives. And let's say that they have a life expectancy of 30 or 40 years, or even 20 years, that mm-hmm. extra tax deferral, the money that they're not paying up front to Uncle mm-hmm. used to grow it, dividends, interest, capital appreciation, and the difference could be $1 million on $1 million IRA. So it's really critical to get that right. And I'm just adding this additional nuance of the trust. But that's what, I mean, a lot of us, I mean, frankly, I'm hopeful that my daughter does get better. She would, you know, but if she doesn't, I want to make sure that we're going to maximize her position, whether she's doing better or whether she is, let's say, closer to the status quo.
Yeah, our mind can only go so far in the lives of our child, right? And I can't imagine that it gets any easier the older that you get or the older the child gets. I'm in, and I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, and she has a 3-year-old. So we're at the beginning of that journey. But just even from the perspective of even trying to look into next year, it's hard. So I imagine the toggle is kind of this happy medium, right, for the time being, to try to cover all your bases, if you will. And it sounds like, you know, yeah, of course, you hope for the best and prepare for the worst, right?
I think that's a good way of putting it. Now, of course, I'm not going to do, let's say that you have two kids and one has a disability and one doesn't. It's perfectly fine to treat those children differently. So the child mm-hmm. that doesn't mm-hmm. have a disability, you know, you could have a standard protection trust. The kid that does, if it's very clear they're going to have a disability, you can just go with the special needs trust. If it's not clear, that's when I like the toggle.
Wonderful. And so then I think we got through the two. What is the final? Right.
And the last one is something that most of your listeners are familiar with, but they don't know the power of it when you're providing for a child with a disability. And by the way, there's a lot of things that you could do, but I'm just going to hit one because it's the big one. Interestingly enough, it's a series of Roth IRA conversions. This would apply to people who have IRAs and 401ks and 403bs and 457s and some type of retirement plan that has not yet been subject to tax, because this money someday, either you, your spouse, or one of your kids or grandkids, charity, somebody is going to pay tax on that money.
Okay.
So I had alluded earlier that if you have a child who doesn't qualify, and the technical term is EDB, eligible designated beneficiary, if you have a child that doesn't qualify as EDB, or in other words, is not getting Social Security or is not getting SSI or SSDI or SSI, then that child has to take the money of the inherited IRA or the inherited Roth IRA over 10 years. If they do qualify, inherited IRA or inherited Roth IRA goes over their lifetime. Well, think about it. If they're deferring these distributions in a tax-free manner over their lifetime, that might be 20, 30, 40 years.
Right.
The additional tax-free compounding, and particularly if the money's in a trust paying high trust rates, that the value of those Roth IRA conversions just does a phenomenal job of protecting the child. And I don't know why it's not in the literature. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know why that isn't the first thing an advisor thinks. Now, of course, again, qualify for SSI, the SSDI, get the estate plan right. And there's lots of other strategies and the ABLE Act. But I know my wife and I have converted what is now well more than $1 million in the Roth IRAs. And that's the difference between our child running out of money and our child having $1.9 million. Now, to be fair, we probably had a bigger IRA than most, and we actually made the conversion even before we knew our child had a disability. But even if you have a $500,000 IRA, in these steps, using some pretty reasonable assumptions, your kid can be better off by $289,000 in today's dollars.
Wow.
And if you're talking about a kid who might end up being broke or have very, very limited government benefits, $289,000 over their lifetime is huge.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, a lot of people don't have, you know, my traditional clients, you know, most of them had $1 million in an IRA, but these strategies are available to people that don't have $1 million. You know, they might have 500,000 or for that, or 200,000. And this does sound a little arrogant because, you know, attorneys love to debate everything and, and you're going to, well, what's the downside, Jim? And blah, 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 blah. And I'm assuming, by the way, that we have somebody, whether it's most likely a CPA, maybe a financial advisor. Attorneys are a little hopeless in this area. We have somebody who's crunching the numbers.
Right.
We're assuming a 6% rate of return. We're assuming boom, 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 boom. Here's if we do nothing. Here's if we do convert X during X years. So let's say that we optimize that. And yes, you can argue about the assumptions. And yes, you're assuming, you know, what the tax rates might be in the future, blah, blah, blah. But this is going to sound arrogant, but it's the way it is. And I want to understand this. This isn't a matter of opinion. This is a matter of math.
Exactly. Numbers.
Isn't you like Barbara Streisand, I like Whitney Houston.
Right.
That's a matter of opinion.
This is a
matter of math.
Mm-hmm.
And if the goal was the most purchasing power, you want to get this Roth IRA conversion strategy done right. And again, there's a lot more to it, and there's all types of nuances within the Roth IRA conversion world. You know, I don't know if you knew that you could sometimes die with a traditional 401k and then make a Roth conversion after you're dead at the child's rate.
Interesting.
I don't know about that. know about the after-tax dollars in an IRA. So I cover all that. I just wanted to talk about the basics.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it gives people, you know, and time, you know, is a thief, right? But as soon as you, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And we can go down the litany of reasons why that is. But purpose of having you on our podcast was at least to kind of start these conversations with people. It is never too late, right? Like you had said, you know, if your goal is to have $1 million or something like that, you know, you connect with somebody and you try to make that happen. But if you don't even know that it's a possibility to, you know, make your money work for you, right? Outside of the traditional just kind of saving our money and not spending a lot. Like there are so many like high yield savings and accounts and like there's all this stuff out there and wanted people to be able to kind of listen from your perspective as somebody that, yes, had the expertise, but was able to kind of convert that information in a way that parents can digest it. And I kind of really wanted to get to how can parents learn more? Can they reach out to you? I know you have a summit that is planned for June. Can you talk a little bit about that, about how parents can get more information from you and your co-authors?
Sure. Let's start with free because everybody loves free. And this might sound arrogant, but I believe every single one of the listeners on your show should take advantage and get a free copy of this book.
Absolutely.
I mean, I put my heart and soul into it. It's 500 pages. There's a 16-page table of contents, so it's very easy to get to the exact thing that you're looking at. I don't recommend reading it to cover unless you have a serious sleep problem. But there's great information in it. I literally have put hundreds of thousands of dollars into writing it, hiring the top CPAs, CPA writers, editors, my own time, my employees' time, estate planning, and plus the work of the two wonderful co-authors. The book is called Retire Secure for Parents of a Child with a Disability. And the way you would get that is you would go to a special website that we have set up for podcast listeners, including your listeners, and they would go to Disabled Child Planning, three words, but all connected, disabledchildplanning.com/podcast. So it's disabledchildplanning.com/podcast. And that will take them to a page where if they give us the contact information, we will just send them the book, no cost. And I really encourage people to do it. And then when you get the book, this isn't something, especially if you get a digital version, or you could get, you know, a hard copy on Amazon, or if you request it, we'll even do a hard copy, depending on how many people respond. I can handle 100. I can't handle 5,000. But anyway, look at the table of contents, because there's going to be something there that you have wanted to know about.
Yeah, right.
And then just start by reading one chapter or even one section. And we have lots of subheads. We have summaries. And I threw in some cartoons and some humor to make it a little heavy stuff. So I try to make it light.
Yeah.
So that is one resource that I would recommend every single listener take advantage of. And by the way, of the 500 pages, probably 350 pages applies to most anybody. So if I'm going to talk to both of you, for discussion's sake, that neither of your children have a disability, it has all types of very valuable information about what I would call the accumulation stage, which would be relevant for you and why you should put money in Roth IRAs or Roth 401ks, or in your case, if you're working for a nonprofit, Roth 403b, and you might not even know that even the employer share can now go into a Roth. I mean, I didn't start the book with a blank sheet of paper. I had 9 bestsellers.
Right.
I took the best of those books. I tailored it for parents of a child with a disability, and then I got the two co-authors. All right, so that's, let's say, resource number one. The second resource is some people do better learning by actually hearing a webinar or a summit. And the other thing, the other advantage of webinars and summits, and particularly the way I do them, is it gives people a chance to ask questions. So what we've done, so we've already done one summit where we had the three co-authors and we got all types of accolades and how wonderful the information was, blah, blah, blah. So we decided for the next one, we're going to expand it. So we're going to have the three co-authors speak, respective areas of expertise. And I genuinely think the three of us are going to give fabulous information.
Absolutely.
But we also decided, well, let's do some other areas within the, let's say, a parent with a child with a disability world. So we're bringing in Tatiana McFadden, who is one of the top athletes with a disability, a Paralympian champion, 20 medals, I think 24 world championships, marathon.
Incredible. Wow.
Yeah. And she has a story that I wish I had more time to tell. But so she's doing this. So she's kind of like the celebrity uplifting. And she's a great speaker and a great woman who has advocated, like her mother, for parents with a child with a disability. And then we have a variety of other experts. So we have somebody who's going to talk about raising a kid with autism, and somebody who's going to talk about raising a kid with bipolar, and then somebody else with brain injury. And so we have a whole bunch of specialty speakers. Now, if your kid has autism, you're not going to be interested in the talk on, you know, for example, brain injury, because
right,
two different beasts.
It's different. Mm-hmm.
And so you can pick and choose. Well, all right, my kid's already qualified for SSI or SSDI. I don't have to listen to that one, but I do hear the estate planning one, or I do want to hear what Jim has to say about Roth IRA conversions. And I want to hear what the expert who on raising a kid with autism has to say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and it's at no cost. I have been advised that I should charge people because otherwise they won't think that they're getting good information.
We've heard the same. We've heard the same. But, you know, it's one of those things where if they need it in that moment and they're really interested, you know, that they will show up. And it sounds like it was really successful the last time. So we appreciate you providing it as a free resource.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, people have different goals at different points in their lifetime.
Yes.
You know, I'm 67. And do I want to get, you know, points? Yes, but not necessarily in dollars. It could be impact points.
Absolutely.
And even if people don't even read any of my section, if they get this book, follow it, and either with some help or on their own, they get their kid qualified for SSI and SSDI, that's a wonderful thing, because you've really made an impact. And that's
That's something that we families all the time to look into these things early. And I think a lot of families are aware of, you know, some of the options available for putting funds into accounts for educational expenses, but they don't always think about, like, what are the options there for them for after school, or if the child doesn't go to college, or all of that. So I think it's important that the families kind of get as much information as possible, because it's not just going to be done if they go to college, or they go to a trade school, or they, you know, get a job, or maybe they're at home or whatever, wherever they may be. There's a lot more to their life than that.
Yes. And frankly, I applaud both of you so I didn't really get into, let's call it, the nonprofit world until pretty late in my career, at a point where, let's say, the money isn't as important. For both of you, who could, I assume, go out and make a lot more money working for a for-profit law firm, you know, you have dedicated your careers to the nonprofit world, and you probably see a lot of people and probably don't charge anywhere near what the estate attorneys that I know charge.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's one of those things that when you're called to it, it doesn't matter when, right? As long as you hear and then are able to turn it into something. And that's why, quite frankly, we were really excited to have you on, because not enough people talk about money in general, right? And then when you have a child with a disability, or, you know, just even the child that you envisioned is not the child that's in front of you, you start to feel overwhelming sense of just overwhelmingness, I suppose. Yeah, you're just overwhelmed, right? And so to be able to know that there is a resource that parents, I love the 16-page table of contents. I have something in my mind, I just need to go and look at that one section, right? I can do that. And then on the other hand, being able to provide a summit virtually so that people can drop in and drop out. Like, it's a wonderful, wonderful resource. And we just so appreciate your time today, James. We really enjoyed speaking to you about this matter. And listeners, all that information will be in our show notes. So you can just follow the link to get your free copy of Retire Secure for Parents of a Child with Disability. And James, if anybody wanted to connect with you, is there a way that they could reach you through the website, or how could they connect with you?
But there's one other thing that I wanted to mention.
Oh, yeah.
For your listeners' convenience, If they go to that same website, disabledchildplanning.com/podcast, also has information about the summit.
So
we don't have all the details, but we do have something up that says, yes, I'm interested. Send me more information as you get it. And then we
will
touch with people on, you know, so-and-so speaking at this time and so-and-so speaking at that time. And if people are interested in, you know, contacting me directly, potentially for services or information, they could go to admin@paytaxeslater.com. Again, that's admin@paytaxeslater.com. And then if they're interested in working with us or interested in information, we'll send a book, we'll send out a questionnaire. They fill out the questionnaire. And then if it makes sense for us to have a consultation, then we will do that. And we are offering consultations. The only thing I ask for is you don't come in blind. I want somebody to do a little reading, watch some of our prior webinars, something. Mm-hmm. Because I have limited time, people have limited budgets, we want to get right to the issues, etc. Yeah. And I'm going to give you guys a special round of applause because it's pretty rare when you have two attorneys, and I was trying to speak quickly and I was trying to probably take over, which I didn't really want to do, but we only had a half hour and there was so much I wanted to get out. And you guys were terrific about giving me that scope, which I'm not used to when I'm around.
I mean, hey, you're the expert. That's why we have a podcast, Jim. We talk too much. And so it was easier than blogs, right? So we get our fix when we do our solo episodes. So again, we wanted to give you the platform and really have the chance to speak freely and like you did for our listeners. So we just, again, we appreciate you. Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Please follow the links in our show notes to get more information and to potentially join that summit. I think it would be really great. And you get a free book. So we will talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Thank you, Dan.